From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, if you have a pet, listen to this story. Amid reports of more than 500 dogs sickened by chicken jerky pet treats imported from China, government health officials are ramping up port inspections for dangerous toxins. The FDA officials have begun collecting and testing chicken jerky treats upon import, analyzing samples for evidence of melamine and also some other chemicals used in plastics. My gosh. Drivers who use marijuana up to 3 hours before driving are twice as likely to cause a collision as those not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, according to a Canadian study. This is because cannabis impairs brain and motor functions needed for safe driving, according to the experts. In China, what a bizarre rumor going all over the place. Nobody's confirmed it or denied it. Twitter rumors claiming that the new Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, was shot to death in his room. Nobody can confirm it. Nobody knows. It could be a hoax, but it's all over the Twitter and the rest of the internet. Mortgages. You know, we've been talking about it all week. They say even if the $26 billion mortgage settlement helps hundreds of thousands of troubled homeowners, it will bring a wave of new foreclosures. Many lenders held off on repossessing homes during the complex negotiations between the 49 state attorneys general and the federal officials. That's left a huge backlog of troubled loans. Many of those loans will not be helped by this new deal, so it looks like the lenders are going to go right after them. Scientists say NASA is about to propose major cuts in its exploration of other planets, especially Mars. And NASA's former science chief is calling it irrational. With limited money for science and an over-budget new space telescope, the space agency had to make a choice where it wanted to explore: the neighboring planet of Mars or the far-off cosmos. Mars lost. Two scientists were briefed on the 2013 NASA budget, say that it'll be released next week and that they will not participate with the Europeans to explore Mars. Up next, we're going to talk to a doctor who's become a medium. That's right. We're going live to the United Kingdom in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, let me tell you about something. With the cold front sweeping the Midwest, plans are plunging into deep south later this weekend. That could be a power failure time, so be on guard. Seacrane has the new CC Solar Observer. This is perhaps the best emergency radio available. It's got a built-in hand crank, solar panel, can even be used with regular batteries, an AM and FM and weather radio. It's got a built-in flashlight, a lighted dial, and here's the great thing. It's only $49.95. Simply be prepared at all times. Call Seacrane at this toll-free number. Mention my name, 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And pick it up for only $49.95. It's a great buy. You can also go to their website. Take a look at the CC Radio 2, the CC Radio EP, the wonderful little SW Pocket, and so much more when you go to www.ccradio.com. And welcome back to Coast, our special guest, Dr. Ian Rubenstein. Dr. Rubenstein, a UK doctor out there in the United Kingdom, he's now trained as a medium using his skills as a primary care physician. This is a very strange tie-in, but let's go to the good doctor here in the United Kingdom. Ian, how are you, doctor?
Hi, George, I'm fine.
Good to have you with us. This is an interesting mix. Now, you're also an author. We'll talk about that in a moment. But how did you mix being a doctor with being a medium?
Well, it's something I never really expected. It came out of the blue. I'm just an ordinary primary care physician. And until one day in 2003, a patient walked into my office and started giving me a message from my deceased grandfather, who I'd never actually met. And at the time, I'd been having various family problems, and I traced the root of these problems to my grandfather. And lo and behold, this guy who walked into my office and started telling me that my grandfather, the one I'd never met, wanted to speak to me. He didn't go into a trance, but he sort of looked a bit distant and said, look, this guy's going to come through. He's going to tell you some stuff. Whatever he tells you, it's him, not me. And he proceeded to tell me loads and loads of stuff that that my patient couldn't possibly know.
What did you think initially? Did you think, this guy's making this up? Somebody's setting me up?
I tell you what I thought. I'm busy. He was the last appointment of the morning. I'm a pretty time-conscious guy. I mean, I do my clinic. I go off and do house calls. I go to the gym. Don't have lunch. I eat sandwiches in between my patients. I dash back to the office for my afternoon clinic. And I was thinking, oh, my God, you know, I'm not going to get to the gym. This is a psychiatric case. The stuff he told me was pretty amazing. It was quite personal. He reeled off this stuff for about 20 minutes. And my jaw was literally on the floor.
Did you believe him?
I didn't know what to believe, quite honestly, George. I'd never come across anything like this before. It was completely outside my... I spent the previous 7 years writing computer software. You know, I was stuck into logic. I spent about 50 hours a week writing a rostering schedule for doctors on call. It was like I'd lifted my head up away from my computer monitor and the world had suddenly changed around me. But the stuff he said was real. You couldn't Google it. So he'd either read my mind or he'd was in contact with the spirit of my dead grandfather.
What possessed him to get in touch with your grandfather or your grandfather to get in touch with him?
Well, nothing. In fact, he tells me he has no control over this, and it just happened. I'll tell you what happened. He was late for the morning, and I was just. And I don't normally hang around for the last patient because they often don't turn up. And I couldn't get. Whatever happens, I couldn't get up off my chair. I sat down, rearranged the papers on my desk, thought, "Come on, get a move on, Ian. You know, it's time to go." And I tried to get up again, couldn't. And then my phone rang, and it was my receptionist saying, "Look, Mr. Bishop, his name's Keith Bishop. Mr. Bishop's PA says that he's just at the local station. He'll only be 5 minutes." And I thought, okay, I'll hang around for him. And that's unusual because normally I just wouldn't hang around. So almost looking back on it, it almost was like someone was sort of holding me in my office.
Okay, so after that happened, after he came in, did he just, what did he act like?
Normal. I mean, Keith is a public relations guy. He looks after a few people in the entertainment business. He's actually quite an entertaining person. He used to work at the BBC as a security guard. When he left the BBC, he had a phone book full of people. So he was a nice guy. He was very personable. He came to have his blood pressure checked. So we were just having an ordinary conversation. And then suddenly he got this sort of distant look in his eye. He said, "Look, Doc, I'm really sorry, but there's a guy here." I thought, where? He said, "No, you can't see him. He's your grandfather, the one you never met. He wants to speak to you." So he said, "Look, he's going to come through me. And, you know, don't worry. Whatever I say, it'll be actually him. I'm just interpreting what he says." And he just sort of looked distant and started reading off this information. It was obviously him speaking.
Yeah.
It was like he was listening to something. It was like he was on a phone, you know, listening and then sort of passing the message on. And he finished off by saying... he stopped and he seemed to sort of put the phone down, re-engage normal gear, and looked at me and said, "You know what, Doc? My spirit guide, William, who, by the way, used to be my boss at the BBC when I worked there," and I thought, really? "says you should be doing this." I said, "What?" He says, "You should be listening to spirit." And I thought, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Thank you very much, Keith. And that was it. And he left my room. And... soon after, one of my receptionists came in sheepishly because I spent about half an hour, maybe longer, 40 minutes with him. And in the UK, we only get 10-minute appointments with our patients, and they know I don't hang around.
Right.
And they said, "You okay, Ian?" And I said, "Yeah, but this guy's just given me a message from my grandfather." And they said, "Oh, we love all that stuff. Do you watch Most Haunted on TV?" I say, "No. What is it? Never heard of it. You know, don't watch this stuff." And that's how it started for me.
Were you pretty convinced, Ian, that it was your grandfather?
Well, I was convinced he had access to privileged information.
Okay.
He shouldn't have known it.
He shouldn't have known that. That's right.
But he could have read my mind. I mean, all sorts of thoughts were going through.
Yeah.
At the end of the consultation, I actually thought that he was onto something. There was definitely something odd about this. And it really intrigued me because this is not meant to happen.
How did he get this ability? Did he go into that?
Yeah, actually, he told me that he'd always had this since he was a child. In fact, the first story he told me was that he's Catholic, actually, and he told me that the first time he noticed it was he was at a wedding as a child, and he was waving at someone, and the priest came up to him and said, "Who are you waving at?" He said, "Well, there's a man standing between the bridegroom and the bride," and he described him, and the priest said, "Well, actually, that." That's the father of the bride, and he died.
Oh my
gosh! That's how he realized he could do this. But it was a very sort of no control, very intermittent. And he says it just happens now and again with him.
Now, did he help train you, or how did you go about getting trained?
No. Keith is one of these guys who sort of sets people off on all sorts of amazing adventures. So what happened afterwards? I mean, I probably would have just let it go, but then I had a series of strange events that occurred to me. And involved my wife as well. Of course, obviously she lives with me. But soon after, I had this really peculiar dream. Now it's very boring hearing people's dreams related, but this was quite stunning. When I dreamt I was at a dinner party at my aunt's house, and my aunt used to throw these lavish dinner parties. And in my dream, my cousin, who's a psychotherapist, was trying to get me to do a chest X-ray on one of her patients, which is odd. And I remember saying to myself, I can't do this, Carol. This is, you know, send it. You know, this is not my job. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I heard myself saying, I'm not psychic and I can't see auras. And then in my dream, I heard this voice to my left, and I saw this little Indian-looking guy, short, stocky little guy, sitting at the end of the table, with a flat cap on his head. A wall light above his head, and he said, with a cockney accent, saying, "Sure you can, boss, I'll show you." And with that, he turned around, flipped the switch on the wall, this light turned on, and all these colours came out of the light, and the most amazing colour that I could see in this dream was these sort of solid gem-like shafts of blue. And he said, "What do you do with all that blue?" And I heard myself saying, "I give it to people." And as I said it, I was crying, and I woke up in floods of tears, thinking I'd gone absolutely bonkers. Woke my wife up, and I said, "Do you think I'm going crazy?" She said, "Well, you've always been a bit crazy, but you know, don't worry, I still love you." And so that was quite stunning, and that sort of freaked me out a bit. But it was just a dream. But the next odd thing that happened to me was very strange indeed, and it happened at the end of a morning clinic. It's actually my son was getting his exams, his major high school exams.
Okay.
Which are quite important. And I'd planned to sort of go into, do my clinic, rush through it, do my house calls, get home to get the results. So we have a house call book in the surgery. So I looked at the house call book before I started my
It's
my
like clinic. An appointment book, right?
Yeah, appointment. Well, people phone in for house calls. We do lots of house calls in the UK. People phone in, we go through it, and there was one house call. I thought, okay, I'll do it before my clinic starts. So I took my car keys and put them on my desk. I threw them on my desk, which is what I normally do, because the visit was just around the corner. And as I went to leave the room, I felt a blow to the back of my head, like a slap, and heard a voice very clearly in the room saying, "Pick up your car keys because they're going to get stolen." And I thought, "Yeah, rubbish. Too busy anyway." Dashed off to do the house call. Actually went to the wrong house because I was in a rush.
Mm-hmm.
Realized my mistake. Came back just in time for my clinic to start. As I got into the health centre, my receptionist, Anne, said, "Ian, have you got a blue Corsa?" That's my car. I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, we just chased two boys out of the car, and we think they're going to have your key." And I said, "Oh, for God's sake, I knew that was going to happen." She said, "Well, why the hell didn't you?
Yeah.
You knew it was going to happen. Why didn't you take your keys?" So there I was, you know, a locked car. God knows what they take from it. Drugs, who knows, prescription pads.
Sure.
A clinic full of patients. What do you do? Well, what you're meant to do in this country is you phone the police, you get what's called a crime reference number, and then you can contact the insurance company, and they'll sort it out. They'll change all the locks. Apparently, that's what you had to do. Luckily, I phoned my wife, and she came down with a spare key. Meantime, I was trying to get through to. I work in a place called Ponders End, which sounds lovely. It used to be a little village, but now it's sort of run down, sort of suburban area of London. And opposite my clinic is a police station, and it's normally a hard-edged place, you know, guys with nightsticks and this sort of thing. But I couldn't get through on the phone. I had a clinic full of patients, and I just thought, oh, God, this is awful. I'm having a terrible time. I had a bit of a break, and I just thought I'd just cross the road, go into the police station, and report it. So I crossed the road going to the police station, And it's been downgraded. They had a security downgrade. And instead of it there being sort of doors you have to go in and guys looking at you threateningly, it was open and there was a pleasant, calm-looking guy behind the desk there. And this is where it got very weird. I thought it was in the Twilight Zone. On the desk, the reception counter, were three little Buddhas. On the wall were religious drawings, like Hindu Om symbols, Christian symbols, Muslim symbols, symbols of every single religion, and pictures of angels, like drawn by children. I thought, this is not the Pont des Arts police station I remember. So the guy takes my details, and he asked my date of birth, and he said, oh, you're a Leo, like me. And I thought, what? This guy was not a policeman, by the way. He was a civilian police officer. And he said, I said, are you into all New Age stuff? And he said, well, actually, I'm a nurse at the local hospital. I'm just filling in here. I'm doing a degree in spirituality, comparative spirituality. So I said, oh, well, you might be interested to know that I knew my car was going to get stolen. I heard a voice telling me I didn't listen to it. He slapped his hand on the desk and said, we were meant to meet. I've got to give you a reading. And with that, he took out a pack of cards from his desk. Showed them to me, Native American medicine cards.
Uh-huh.
I said, pick a card. I thought, what's going on here? So I, not knowing what to do, I just picked the
You've
card.
You've got all these strange people coming at you
exactly.
all the time.
I mean, it was really weird. So I picked a card. He said, ask a question. And the question I asked was my software going to be sensible? I've been writing this software for 7 years. And gave him the card, turned it over. And the card said, the world is not yet ready. And I thought, well, that's a bugger then.
Yeah. So that's disappointing.
So I go back to my surgery, having got my crime reference number, tell the receptionist, they all start going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, Ian, you're in the Twilight Zone, you know, what's going on here? And I thought, well, this is crazy. The next day we go to a party, it's a family party, distant relatives, and the very first person I get talking to was a woman who works as an occupational therapist. And she just out of the blue says, oh, by the way, I grew up in a haunted house. We had a poltergeist in the house. And I said to my wife, I said, look, you know, this is getting too much for me. I'm going to go, you know, you have a chat with her. I'll go into another part of the house, meet some more people. And this house had two yards. So I go into a smaller yard through the kitchen. And as I go into this yard, there's a swing bench. My cousin Rose is sitting on it. And she's sitting next to a guy. And the first thing I hear as I walk into this small garden is she's saying, well, I used to be a spiritual healer, but I had to give it up when the kids were born. So I looked at her and said, Rose, you know, I keep on bumping into this stuff. What's happening? And she said, oh, Ian, it's quite easy. They want to work with you. I said, who want to work with me? She said, the spirits. What do you mean, the spirits? She said, well, they want to work with
you. And this was the first time you were told that?
This was the first time, yeah. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you're a doctor, and all doctors have healing guides, people on the other side who may have been alive. Interested in helping people when they're alive. Why do they change when they're dead? And I said, yeah, no way. She said, well, look, watch out for coincidences. And sure enough, in a couple of days later, I had some strange coincidences happen. I mean, do you want to hear about
them? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I was heavily into writing software. And I had this package I'd written, which I was trying to put out. And
what kind of software for medical?
It does scheduling software for doctors. If it's old hat now, it's been superseded. But I was really into it. You know, I've been putting a lot of work into this.
Yeah.
And also, of course, I was told to watch out for coincidences. There's a medical magazine in this country called Pulse. Every doctor gets it. And on the front page of Pulse the next week were two articles. One was a review on medical software. Software. And the other one was an article by a doctor who became a spiritual healer. And I thought, well, these are two things which are, you know, occupying my mind at the moment.
Sure.
Weird stuff and rostering software. And there was an email address from this doctor. So I thought I'd contact him. So I emailed him, contacted him, and I got a one line back saying, phone me. And he had his phone number on it. So I said to my wife, what do you think I should do? She said, well, phone him. What have you got to lose? So I had this very weird conversation with this guy. And he said he'd also had strange experience. He'd been a physician but left and set up a healing practice. He now trained healers. But then he said something completely off the wall. I mean, I said, do you believe that my patient can see spirits? He said, oh, yes. He said, I see spirit all the time. In fact, I've got an alien living in my apartment.
An alien?
I thought, oh, yeah, sure. I mean, we've all got aliens living in our apartment. Why not? So I went, uh-huh. And then he went back into normal mode, and said, well, you know, really, maybe you ought to explore healing, and gave me some phone numbers to find out. And I put the phone down thinking, I've just spoken to a doctor who believes he's got an alien living in his apartment. What the hell's going on here? This is crazy stuff.
And you're about ready to call somebody he recommends.
Well, no. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I'm feeling very uneasy here. You know, I mean, but at the same time, really intrigued, George, because this was one thing after another. I mean, this had never happened. It's one thing after another, one odd event after
another. It's like it was a mission for you, you know?
Well, it was like someone was trying to shake me and say, look, you know, or take me by the hand and say, look, you know, just explore this area. And I am by nature quite curious. And I didn't see any harm in it. I did a search on the internet for one of the organizations that he mentioned, the National Federation of Spiritual Healers, and thought that they sound a respectable organization. And I went along to one of their groups and tried it out and had a very nice time and had a trainee healer sort of run her hands over me.
Hold on for a second, Ian. Okay. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back with you. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk with Dr. Ian Rubenstein about his work as a medium. Well, American officials are saying, no, Kim Jong-un is not dead. It's a hoax. So that's the latest. We'll have to follow that one. We won't be talking to him on the other side, that's for sure. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Ian Rubenstein as we talk about what's on the other side on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Dr. Ian Rubenstein, live from the United Kingdom, as we talk about his work consulting spirit, a doctor's experience with practical mediumship. Ian, what kind of a doctor are you in this country? Are you a specialist, general practitioner?
We call ourselves GPs, general practitioners, which is equivalent to primary care physicians in the States, I think.
But you do house calls. Man, they don't do that over here anymore.
Oh, no, we do that. We do quite a few. We've got a lot of elderly people.
That's great.
So, you know, you have to see them at home. They can't get in sometimes.
Okay, so let's get back to your life as a medium. So at what point did you say, I'm going to start practicing this. I'm going to study this.
Okay, right. Well, I have to backtrack to 1976.
All right.
Because I'm beginning to think all the weird things have happened to me. And I had an experience when I was 19 in my first year at medical school that really made me think, and it sort of probably opened me up to this more than most people. So it was my first year at medical school. We just finished. It was summer 74, that would be. And I had this good friend, Nick, and he had a girlfriend called Felicity. And my sister was then aged 15, and we were at Nick's house. Felicity was down for the summer vacation staying with him. And we were having a perfectly ordinary conversation one evening. And I've got to describe Felicity. She was quite attractive. She had long, dark hair, darkly complected with sort of brown eyes. We were just having an ordinary conversation. So it was me, Nick, Felicity, and my sister. And I was talking. I mean, I'm quite good at talking. I happened to glance at Felicity, and in her place was somebody else, a blonde-haired snow queen, with blonde hair down to her shoulders, a fringe, the most piercing blue eyes you've ever seen, high cheekbones. And the interesting thing was as if her lips were quite distorted and thick with frosted lipstick on it. And I just sort of looked.
Mm-hmm.
Gulped, and I think if it had just gone for a couple of seconds, I'd have just ignored it. You know, just thought, what was that? Nothing. Yeah. But at the precise instant I saw this, my sister, remember she was only 15, jumped up out of her chair and started screaming at the top of her voice hysterically, "My God, can you see those lips?" And I looked at my sister and looked back at Felicity, and she was perfectly normal. Now this being looked at me, and I got a couple of messages. The first thing was is that Felicity had a crush on me, and I'd been sort of playing up to this, as you do at that age. And the message message I got was, keep back. What you're doing is wrong. And it was quite an imperious look. I mean, this was like sort of some sort of Snow Queen. The next message was mark this. One day you'll understand. And that was it. And at which point, I mean, I burst into tears. I wasn't frightened, but it was really emotional. It was as if I got hit by this wash of emotion. And we sort of jumped in my car. It was now about 2 o'clock in the morning. Rushed around to my parents, woke them up. You can imagine what they said.
Oh, yeah. They thought, exactly. Something's wrong with Ian.
Exactly. Well, no, just stop being stupid. And it took the, take Nick and Felicity back home. But the next day, of course, we told all our friends. And my good friend Steve said, look, I don't know what this was, but my neighbour is a medium, a guy called Keith Hudson. Why don't you come round and tell him? So we went round, all of us sort of 19-year-olds sitting in Steve's house, and this sort of guy who's about 7 or 8 years older than us comes in and explains calmly that what we witnessed was Felicity's spirit guide, who'd appeared in front of her to protect her, presumably from me, who'd been toying with her emotions. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I was my first year at medical school. You know, men were still landing on the moon in 73. I was heavily into science, and this was completely outside anything that I'd read about in textbooks or anything. I mean, it wasn't meant to happen. The only explanation I could think of was either Keith Hudson was right, or my sister and I had shared a hallucination.
That's
we both
right.
described the same thing.
Which would now, be pretty rare.
It's not meant to happen, is it? So either explanation indicates some paranormal experience. Now, that had been in my mind, and I'd lost contact with my friend Steve, and the last time I saw him was 1976 at his wedding, and that Keith Hudson happened to be there. So it was the last time I saw Keith Hudson. So I'd had all these odd experiences, coming back to 2003 now, and I was wondering what to do, and I was having a chat. I've got this patient called Dave Godfrey. He's a lovely guy. He's an ex-science teacher who became a spiritual healer, and he's got a lovely long beard, and he wears hippie feathers. He's like a superannuated hippie, and I said to Dave, look, you know, all this weird stuff's happening to me, and he sort of looked over his glasses at me and said, well, he said, you know, Ian, I think spirit want to work with you. I said, Dave, really? He said, yeah. I said, well, what do I do? He said, well, what you need to do to get a handle on this is to join a psychic development circle. I said, well, what are they? And he explained that these circles are run at spiritualist churches. And I said, well, look, you know, Dave, I'm a non-practicing Jew. My wife's Hindu. There's no way I am going to go to anything called a church. and anyway, you know, spiritualism, you know, it's a bit creepy, isn't it? And he looked at me and said, well, he said, if spirit wants to work with you, then you'll be shown the way. And that was it. The very next day, my wife is sitting in the kitchen looking at the local paper, and she sees a small ad for the local spiritualist church, the Beacon of Light Spiritualist Church. And she points it out to me and said, Ian, look at the guy who's giving an address there. It was Keith Hudson. I said, is that the guy you saw when your Felicity's face changed? I said, yeah. She said, well, why don't we go? I said, well, go to a spiritualist church. She said, yeah, what have you got to lose? So I thought, okay, well, we'll go along.
So you were curious.
Yeah, curious, a little bit wary. I mean, you know, if you've never been to a spiritual church before, you wonder what the hell goes on in these places.
Yeah.
But it was very pleasant. I mean, I have to say, it was lovely. The service reminded me of my school assemblies we used to have. And the people there were quite normal. And sure enough, Keith Hudson was there at the front. There was a little service, which was quite pleasant. And he sat on the stage with his eyes closed. I thought, this is odd. But he was obviously trying to tune into spirit. And he stood up and he's pretty good. He gave everybody a message, a brief message. He went a fair clip through the whole congregation. Must have given about 20 messages. Gave a message to my wife, and she thought that this was actually quite indicative of her grandmother who passed. And then he came to me and he said the very same thing that he said to me when I was 18. The very first time he met me, he said, Ian, you've got a lot of knowledge around you. You don't know you know it, but you will one day. And at the time, I was just going to medical school. I thought, yeah, Keith, anybody can say that. But he comes to me, and bearing in mind, I look absolutely completely different. I mean, I had dark curly hair, beard, and wore contact lenses when I was a teenager. Now I've got no hair. I'm grey. I wear glasses. I do look very different. You can't recognize me. But he came up to me and said, sir, at the back there, he said, they're telling me you have a lot of knowledge around you. And I thought, yeah, you must say that to everyone. Actually, he doesn't. You don't know Unite, but you will very soon, and they're telling me you'll be writing a book about it. And I thought, oh, okay. There's no way I'm going to be writing a book. Anyway, at the end of the service, the president of the church stood up and said that Mr. Hudson hasn't got a car. Can anyone get in a lift back to Walthamstow, which is a neighbouring borough? So I stood up and said, yeah, I'll give Keith a lift as long as he comes back to my house for a cup of tea. I can be quite excited.
You wanted this night to continue.
Well, obviously, and of course, you do get some odd people at spiritual services. So Keith, bless him, jumped back a bit and went white because, you know, I was a bit sort of in your face. And when I said, Ian, I said, Keith, it's me, Ian. And he looked at me and said, the doctor. I said, yeah. He said, I was just speaking about you the other day.
That's fine.
So we sort of, shook hands and I introduced him to my wife. He came back to my house for a cup of tea. and a smoke. They smoke heavily, these mediums.
And how long had it been since you saw him last?
27 years.
Wow. Okay.
And when it was time to go home, I told him what had been happening to me. He said, listen, Ian, I run the largest open circle, psychic development circle in North London. Why don't you join my circle? I'd be happy to have you. So on the way back, I dropped him off at his church, actually. On the way back, I said to Poonam, my wife, do you think I ought to go? She said, well, what have you got to lose? So that's how it started. And this was now February 2004. Well, there was a break over Christmas, but one rainy evening, a Thursday, February 2004, found me standing outside Vestry Road Spiritualist Church in Walthamstow.
So that's how it started for you?
That's how it started. And I was feeling very, very edgy and thinking, what the hell am I doing?
What did you do, Ian, to perfect your abilities?
Well, okay, they're still not perfected, George. I'm not the best medium in the world. What did I do to explore this? Well, I mean, the way it works, as I discovered, is that you meet, and the way it's done at this church is they have a large circle. They meet every Thursday. And the way it goes is everybody sits in a circle. Keith will say a brief opening prayer. Spiritualists believe that you say this to sort of link into spirit and to protect the circle. And then he'd start off with a short meditative journey, which meditation called a journey. And the idea is that you follow this journey. You can imagine that you're walking through a forest, that you're going somewhere, or you're bathing in different colored pools, all sorts of things, just to sort of get the psychic juices flowing. Sort of stimulate your imagination, and when that's done, there are various exercises, and the exercises that Keith started with were somewhat unusual, and that actually was quite good for me. So in most circles, you'll start to try and sort of just tune in and sort of give people messages. You know, I see something like a dog or something, or a parrot for you, or I've got your grandmother here. But what Keith did. Was now he claimed that his spirit guide, and he claims that we've all got spirit guides, and his spirit guide was in cahoots with our spirit guides, which is this is all very odd for me at the time, and that everybody would be allocated a number. So what he'd do is he'd pick a person, and we wouldn't know which person he'd pick, and he'd go around the circle clockwise or anti-clockwise, and everybody would have a number. Now he wouldn't tell us what the number was, but he claimed that our spirit guides would know. Which number belonged to which person. And we were to sort of think of thoughts or images and just call them out and then give a number for that. So we'd say, for instance, the very first thing I saw was a teacup and a little tornado. It was like in my imagination, just a vivid image.
Right.
And I saw this little tornado sort of shrink down and go into a teacup. And I thought, well, what number is this one? It was the number 6. So I called out, storm in a teacup for number 6, Keith. So he wrote that down. And at the end of the circle, he cracks the code. And it turned out number 6 was for a truck driver called Rod. And he keeps the messages. So he collated all the messages and gave my message to Rod. And Rod said, yeah, I just had an argument with the wife. Yeah, thank you, Doc. And that was a very, nothing amazing, nothing particularly evidential, and but quite interesting as a way of getting your imagination going. However, I began to notice a few patterns. Now, bearing in mind that Keith would give different numbers to people each week, depending on where his spirit guide apparently would tell him where to start. So so Rod, one week, might be number 6. Next week, he might be number 10.
Okay.
It varies. Yeah. But I found, to my great surprise, that I would track various individuals. And I'd go through...
Regardless of their number.
Regardless. And this is very strange. I mean, I'd consistently give Rod messages for a few weeks, and then it would be Jane. And I remember the first message I gave, evidential message that I gave that made me really think this could be real and not just fantasy, was I didn't know Jane was number 9 that week. And... I tried various different visualization techniques to get the numbers. At the time, I'd let images come into my head. So I saw this guy with a moustache and sort of slicked black hair with pomade on it, and I got the name George. And the message I think was check the holiday arrangements, the vacation arrangements, as you say in the States. I thought, okay, fine. And then I wondered what number it was for. And at the time, I was sort of imagining, you know, you're sitting in a movie theater and you saw those old-fashioned numbers flash down before the film starts, you know?
Yeah.
10, 9, 8, 7. And it stopped at number 9. So I thought, okay, this is for number 9. Turned out it was for Jane. And she said, oh, that sounds like my Uncle George. She said, he often comes through, but I don't know what the message is. So I kept a note of all my messages in a spiral-bound notebook. And the next week, she came in with a photograph. And she said, this is my Uncle George. And it was the guy I saw.
The guy, perfect.
And she said, look, I booked my holiday on the internet.
Because I was going to say, Ian, how do you know, at least in the beginning, until you get perfected here, how did you know that these weren't just thoughts that would float into your head and float out again, or that you were really experiencing something?
Well, I didn't, but this is what started happening. She then said, look, I checked the vacation arrangement on the internet. I thought we'd sent the money off. We hadn't. And I realized that actually I had made a mess of it. So thanks for the message.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I began to think, well, yeah, that's interesting. And then other stuff starts to happen. I tried various different visualization techniques. I remember thinking, well, the movie thing's boring. I imagine a flip chart. In my mind, little jokey images would appear on the flip chart. I remember seeing this guy in a miner's helmet with a hole in the ground. And at the sort of top left-hand corner of the flip chart, I imagined a number, and it was for number, I don't know, number 6.
You would get that right. Would you say that you were remote viewing?
No. I mean, this is just a way of getting images and getting images out.
Okay.
So when I gave this image to number 6 or whatever it was, and the code was cracked, it turned out that the guy's patio had just fallen in his backyard that day, and there was a hole in the ground. So there's stuff like this. The next week, it was the same guy. I mean, I tracked him for a while.
That's amazing.
I gave him a message about water leaking everywhere as I came into the church. He said, "Oi, Doc, the next time you give me a message about water leaking, give me a name of a good plumber, because my washing machine broke down. There's water everywhere." And that was interesting. But nothing spectacular. I mean, you're not seeing spirits manifest or anything like that. It was quite gentle. And the fact that it was what we call single blind, you know, it was semi-scientific. I mean, yeah, I didn't know who I was giving the messages to, remember. I mean, okay, Keith knew, but I didn't. And it was not exactly scientific, double-controlled, random trial and all this stuff, but nonetheless, it was an element of precaution taking, you know, to make sure that I couldn't have got any information any other way.
How much of this began to consume your career?
Well, okay, well, the very first time this happened, was I was in Circle one day, and a woman there who was quite more advanced than me said, who's that German soldier behind you tapping his foot impatiently? I said, oh, I don't know. Who is it? She said, well, she described him as blonde, tall, thin, sort of fair-haired and quite impatient.
And you didn't see him?
I didn't see him. No, I couldn't see him. And she said, what is his German Second World War uniform? And I said, well, look, mate, it's highly unlikely I've got a German Second World War officer attached to me. She said, well, he's going to let you know who he is and who he belongs to. And I thought, well, the only German person I know is, first of all, my cousin Lottie, and she escaped the Nazis, so, you know, that's not going to be her. But I've got this German patient called Ellie Richardson. Unfortunately, Ellie died this year, very sadly. But Ellie grew up in Germany, and she was at the bombing of Hamburg. And Ellie married an English, British officer in the occupying forces and came to live in London. And I got to know Ellie very well. I looked after her husband, Tony, when he was dying. And she had quite bad respiratory problems. So I thought, what is this guy's for Ellie? But it was sort of 9:30 at night. And I thought, imagine what she'd think if I sort of turned up on a doorstep saying, hey, I've got this guy. Do you know him? And I thought, well, you know, how am I going to get this to Ellie? The very next day in my clinic, Ellie's booked for an 8:30 appointment. And I'm looking at there thinking, oh, that's good. I wonder how I can sort of broach the subject with Ellie. And I wonder what this guy's name is. And with that, I sort of heard this voice in my head saying, Karl Heinz. And I thought, oh, where's that come from? Wonder if that's his name. So Ellie comes into my room, and I'm thinking, what do I say to you? And I said, oh, Ellie, you know, how are you? And we got chatting. And I said, oh, Ellie, I met a medium last night, you know. And she said, I'm really into that. I said, are you? She said, yeah, I visit the clairvoyant lady next door. She's gave me some very nice readings since Tony died. I said, well, she described this man, and I described him. And I wish I said the name, because she said, that sounds like my boyfriend, Karl Heinz. And I thought, what? She said, yeah, I went out with him before I met Tony, but he was in a Panzer regiment, and I never heard from him after the war, and a load of guys died, and I think that may be him. So I thought, God, I really wish I'd mentioned the name Karl Heinz. And that was the first time it spilled over into my clinic.
Now, do they come at you, or do you will them?
Well, no, we haven't got there yet. No, I don't. They come at me. You don't will
they
them.
Do. You don't will them. Okay.
No. I mean, in spiritualism, they're quite clear about this, that you don't call up the dead. That's necromancy. What you do is you open yourself up and allow them to come through to you.
Hold on, Ian. We're going to take this break. You're with us for another hour. We'll take some phone calls as well and talk more about your life as a doctor, as a medium. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.